Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast Markets with Sean Hackett from Hackett's Financial Advisors. Sean, how you doing this morning?
Pretty good, Mr. Casey. Having a really good day.
Good deal, man. It's probably hot and sunny down there and wicked humid and all that fun stuff that Florida brings this time of year.
It's going to be like this until probably October.
Right on. There you go. There you go. Yeah, it's we're supposed to have a little dose of heat today, and last week we had some. So
I was in Iowa last week, and it was almost 100 degrees. So yeah. I felt in my own element.
Right, you picked a good time to go to Iowa.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Okay. Volatility is definitely leading the way here. When you start looking at what's going on in the markets, we've seen yesterday's a good example of that. We started out a couple cents down and rallied back around and back and forth and went up and went down. I think there was about a 7 cent swing in the market from the time it opened till the time it closed, and it was on both sides of zero both times. So more than once, actually. So, I mean, talk about the volatility in the market right now, and I know it's something we've talked about quite a bit, but it seems like that volatility is getting more, is starting to ramp up more as we get closer to that August report.
Well, I mean, really, I mean, it's quite a few things. First of all, you know, we're moving into pollination for corn, setting pods for soybeans. This is the mission critical phase for determining yields. And so everyone knows we got the crop off to a terrible start, a late start, maturing slowly. And so any potential additional weather problems at a critical stage of development here, you know, it's going to set the market, you know, either good or bad, depending on if they view the weather being favorable or not. So you know, if it's a little bit too hot or too dry or too cool or too wet, there's just no margin for error. And, of course, we have this huge report coming up in August where there's going to be a resurvey by the USDA in terms of what farmers might have planted. And also there could be some different views on the yield front. So the market's going to also be very nervous and speculating around what they will or will not say in that report. So with all this going on, it's just going to continue to be a wild ride depending on the sentiment for the day.
Yep. Okay. So with that being said, I mean, how much, I know there's two distinct camps out there. One is everything's going to be fine. They're going to have the exact same yield, so on and so forth. Then there's the other camp that's, you know what, we planted it late. We historically know when you plant late, you're not going to get the yields, so on and so forth. How much, I guess, what's going to be the overall reaction to the August report comes out when there's that seven to eight million acres of prevent plant that's been bouncing around out there. The USDA has been kind of hinting at for a while here. I mean, what's the market's reaction to that going to be, and is it going to be a limit up, limit down type of day, or is it going to be just a, well, we kind of already have that figured in there?
Well, if they come out and they don't make, they don't make big changes to the acreage, maybe they move it around a little bit, but they don't make any major changes. It really depends on how they frame that report. If you remember the last report, they came out with this bombshell number. Then after the report came out and after the market was limited down, they said, oh, by the way, we don't think this is really very accurate. So what I think they might do is provide some additional colors to how accurate they think this number is, whatever the number is. So for example, if they come out with a number that, let's say they move it down a million or two, but they don't really give that 6 or 7 or 8 million down that the market's thinking, but they craft it in that we, you know, in the idea that we're really not factoring in revamped plant in this report. We'll be factoring more of that in. You know, the market may not take it as bad. It really depends what if the USDA says, look, that's the number, and we stand by it. That's very different than this is another number, but we still don't think it's really close to the truth. So unfortunately, the reaction is going to be dependent upon how the USDA frames the data and how reliable the USDA claims the data to be, especially on the acreage number. Yields are still going to be very uncertain because we're not far enough along yet. So in the report, I suspect the market will be watching how the government frames the report because that's still not going to be an accurate report of the acreage. Still not going to be certified acreage. It's still not going to really factor in all the prevent plan. We think more of that will take place in September and October. But the USDA has got to tell us to what extent they believe that's the case.
Yeah.
You know? Nonetheless, heightened volatility will probably occur around that report for a little while.
So. I can imagine so. I mean, as volatile as it's been here the last couple of weeks, and every day gets to be a little bit worse than the day before. I mean, we had, the intraday swings are what kills me, not so much the day-to-day stuff. It's the intraday stuff. So it's pretty impressive.
Given all the flack that the USDA has gotten over the release of the last report and how poorly they did it, I think they're going to be very, very mindful of making sure this report is viewed in the light of how should one be looking at the data and how accurate should one be thinking about the data. So I do think, you know, they're going to be a little more revealing and open to how should one really look at this number and how reliable should we. I don't think we're just going to go in, in the dark like the last one. I think they're going to – I don't think they're going to want more egg on their face for a second month in a row. So
right.
I'm pretty confident we'll get a better idea of how accurate or how much closer to the truth is this number, but we still don't believe it will be the end report. We think it's going to be moving closer to the truth.
Right on. So cattle markets, there again, tons of volatility there as well. They're up 1 week, down the next, and they're kind of everywhere in between during the week. So talk about what you see happening in the protein complex and also talk about what you see happening on the hog side as far as China goes.
I think we talked about last time that the tariffs are now removed for pork Chinese pork imports for U.S. due to these exemptions. And ever since we got in July, prices have taken off in China and prices have taken off here. I mean, I think we're up 10 or 12 cents here in hogs really since the beginning of July. So we've had a big move. Export commitments are at record highs, and we're starting to deliver the product. And from what we hear, looks like we're going to go out there and talk a little more next week. And so on the margin, sentiment-wise at least, it just helps the hog market along. And the same thing in the cattle market. You know, the cattle market's been rising pretty steadily. Massive export commitments that haven't been delivered yet that are starting to be delivered. We're seeing beef prices in Australia making new highs. We're seeing beef prices in Brazil making new highs. And so this is all indication that this big meat protein hole that's been sort of been put on delay in the first half of the year due to trade tensions and also just some extra supply that came into the market from the herd liquidation is now behind us, and we're ready to refill that hole. And obviously the U.S. has to be part of the equation because the problem is so, so very, very big. So we're pretty optimistic. We really like the hog market. We actually, in our report, last week we talked about how this we're likely entering the round two rally from the first rally we had going into the first of the first part of the year. So we're very optimistic that at least on the livestock cattle side we're going to see kind of a steady uptrending market here for a while.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So cotton market is one of those deals we talk about here and on Wednesdays. I think it's an important thing to talk about because of the effects that it has on the U.S. economy. And we start looking at how that's an indicator of what's going on as far as, recessions or, upticks in the economy, those kind of things. So we've talked about drought situations over in India and key growing areas of the cotton market and the quality of cotton that might be coming out of that area. We got a bit of a drought going on, off and again, on again drought going on in the southeast. Had a hurricane roll through the kind of the southeast part of the Cotton Belt, and it was already struggling anyway because of rains and cold weather and so on and so forth. Had some heat kind of come through there in the stripper cotton part of that area. Saw a bit of a rebound in his cotton, but maybe too little too late type of thing. So talk about what we see happening in the cotton market and with the drought and the hurricanes and those kind of things in our area. What's the effect on the U.S. cotton production, I guess, and quality that we're seeing right now in the U.S.?
Well, certainly weather's been not certainly there's been a lot of problems, especially in India and spotting problems in the U.S. But as we move into the hurricane season, which is August and September, there's always typically weather threats that come in, especially the Gulf storms that come in and impact Texas and the Deep South, where they grow a lot of cotton. Because remember, the bowls will be opening up. And when they open up, you throw moisture on an open bowl and you get all kinds of quality problems. And this has happened many, many years in the past. And when you look at the distribution of the probabilities of where the storms are likely to form this year, certainly the Western Gulf is a high impact area this year. So we would expect to see, several storms potentially threaten. And that's all it has to do is threaten. Whether it actually does any damage or not, if it just threatens and people worry about it, they drive the market higher because of the importance of what that might mean at a very important time when cotton is vulnerable to quality downgrades. Remember, the most important thing about the cotton market for U.S. supply is that we produce some of the best quality cotton in the world, bar none. So when the Chinese are looking at their cotton production and their cotton stock, which is low quality, they have to blend it with our really high quality cotton in order to make the kind of items that they want. And so that's why the U.S. is always a high sought after supply. And if that supply quality goes down, then everyone rushes in to try to find whatever good quality is left, because the rest of the world really can't fill that gap. And that's what makes August and September so difficult and so volatile for cotton, because those hurricanes really threaten that. And we do think there's a very good chance of at least one major storm, putting a wrench into the concern of quality downgrades in the U.S., especially in the Deep South and Texas. So that's really where we'd be focusing on, and where we think cotton could catch a big weather rally here after being hit repeatedly throughout the last 2 to 3 months on economic concerns that we've talked about in the past.
Right. Okay, speaking of economic concerns, July 30th, the Fed meets, talk about what they're going to do with interest rates here at the end of the month here, July 30th. Lots of talk out there where there's going to be some reduction in interest rates and start moving that backwards, where over the last 18 months we've heard everything from we're going to have 3 rate hikes a year of 0.25%. Or quarter point anyway, all the way through the next foreseeable future. And now we're talking about the flip of that, where we might see 3 reductions a year for the foreseeable future. So I guess talk about that side of the business and what you see happening there, and then the effects that I'm kind of looking forward to, some lowering interest rates, because obviously from the equipment side of the business, we start looking at millions of dollars worth of stuff being financed. Every quarter point counts. So if it starts going backwards the other way, you're going to hopefully see some moves there. But that being said, it's also kind of an indicator that there's a little bit of an issue, a little softness in our economy, correct?
Well, the Fed Reserve in the past has always been guilty of waiting too long to lower interest rates, waiting until the economy is already in a downturn, already really, really bad. And then, of course, the collateral damage to get out of it makes it that much harder to come out of it. So I think what this Federal Reserve is doing, and maybe President Trump's hounding over Chairman Powell, maybe that's had an impact or not, but what it appears they're trying to do is they're trying to preemptively start lowering rates before we hit the hard skids to the downside. So, meaning I think they're seeing warning signs that are approaching, and they're not going to wait this time to see the whites of the eyes of a recession. They're going to try to get ahead of the curve and avoid it, maybe have a softer landing, not such a hard landing like we've seen so many times in the past. And if they do lower rates at the end of the month, as they suggested that they might, this would really be the first time that we've seen the Federal Reserve do this, and that would be encouraging that they are actually mindful of getting ahead of this, and maybe it'll avoid, a more collateral damage or a worse outcome like we've seen repeatedly over the years. So obviously that's a very important meeting. Will they follow through and deliver? I sure hope so, because I do think preemptive Fed is something we've needed for a long time, and maybe this is the first sign that they're ready to change their stripes and be more proactive instead of being reactive.
Right. Well, yeah, and I'm really interested to see what happens with that and then what the reaction is, not just to the commodity markets, but also to the stock markets and see what happens there, especially around the world. Like we've talked about here, China's economy is not necessarily booming right now. And, everywhere else in the world is kind of the same way. We're kind of in a slide across the world here. So there's people keep pointing to tariffs that's what's driving the economy down. And whether it is or isn't, I don't know. I think we're probably just due for one of these dips in the economy, and we're going to move forward from there. But Sean, any last thoughts before we close this down?
Well, I think that the other, if we really want to get commodities going to the upside at least, and provide some better, longer term, more sustainable, higher prices for U.S. producers, I mean, we really need to see the U.S. dollar roll over and really start a downtrend. And we're hopeful that maybe the Federal Reserve lowering interest rates is the first sign that we're going to see some more of a bearish sentiment coming in the U.S. dollar. We haven't seen that yet. We've had some pockets of weakness, and then it rallies. We've been sort of developing this rounding top, we call it. But what we're really interested to see is, when does the U.S. dollar really turn down based upon the Federal Reserve's easing of monetary policy? Because once that happens and the trend has begun to the downside, then our ag markets can really, really go. And not to mention our exports become super competitive again.
Right.
So that's really important. Until that happens, that's a huge headwind that keeps our prices held back to some extent. So that's something we want to see that reaction on top of other reactions, like you said, stocks. We want to see the U.S. dollar reaction to what the Fed not only does, but what they actually say about what they will continue to do.
Yep.
So,
yeah, and having the dollar get a touch weaker headed into this stretch of the year would be a really big thing for us, especially as we start heading in towards that key export period for China, when we start looking at when our crops come out and get stuff overseas. So that'd be a huge move for us.
Absolutely. I mean, we're entering that period from the fall, winter, where we're the only game in town to sell our, most of our grains and things. And so that would be an ideal time to have, weakening dollar, better competition, and we can really move the product out, especially if our supplies are going to be shorter. We can really get things going and get our prices back to where, farmers can put equity back into the business instead of coming out of the business, which, as being in the equipment business, your buyers are have not been having some good years in terms of excess capital to buy things. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm fully aware of that. So, yeah. There's definitely part of that. Yep. So, all right, Sean, well, good stuff as usual. Folks want to reach out to you and get some information from you. Where's the best place to go get that information?
Our website at Hackett, H-A-C-K-E-T-T, advisors.com. There's all kinds of information that they can look at, things they can download to see how we look at things and to see if our services might be of value to them.
Right on, Sean. All right, Sean. Well, Sean Hackett with Hackett Financial Advisors, and I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. And you can check this podcast out on Global Ag Network, along with a lot of other ones like Dryland Farmer Podcast and Angie Setzers, who will be on here on Friday, Girls Talk Ag. So till next week, Sean, have a good one. We'll talk to you then.
Good. Thanks, Casey.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at Moving Iron Podcast at movingironpodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Mellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit movingironllc.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and GlobalAgNetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour, out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving on.